high school now. And now it's time to like go out to the world a little. But the truth is, I feel every time I speak to a group of seniors, I feel like now's the chance to really start being Jews. Like now, for the first time in your life, you're going to go out to the world in a different way. And that's whether you're going to college next year, whether you're going to Israel next year. But now that you're done with sort of like the official, formal, kindergarten through 12th grade type of Jewish education, so now you're going out to the world, and now the choice is really yours. You're not going to take attendance whether you went to davening anymore. You're not going to grade your interest in learning Torah anymore. It's up to you. It's between you and God. And that's an amazing, amazing opportunity to go out to the world with that sense of mission of what it means to be a Jew. To what sense do I have an ownership over my Judaism? To what sense do I see myself as a professional Jew? I'll tell you an amazing story. There was a lawyer from New York who traveled to Yerushalayim. He came to Yerushalayim. And he was sitting with the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav, Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, one of the great Torah geniuses of the previous generation. He's sitting with him, and they're sitting together, and they're talking. And the Brisker Rav says to him, he says, tell me, like, what do you do? So the guy says, I'm a lawyer. So the Brisker Rav says, oh, okay, interesting. Not a lot, okay. The conversation goes on, they're talking about different things. A couple minutes go by. And the Brisker Rav turns to him and he says, tell me, what are you involved in? What do you do? So he figures, like, the rabbi wants to know, like, what type of law I'm in. So he says, I'm involved in corporate law. The rabbi's nodding along. Conversation goes on, a couple more minutes. And he turns to me and says, tell me, what do you do? So it's clear the rabbi is, you know, three times already, the rabbi's up to something. So he says, Rabbi, I don't know what you want. Like, what do you want me to say? You want to, like, specifically, like, you want to see my law degree? Like, what exactly are you getting at? So he says to him, let's learn a pasuk together. He opens up the math that was lying on the desk, and he opens up the story of Yonah. Remember the story of Yonah and the big fish. And you remember that scene where Yonah's boat is shaking. It's a terrible storm. Yonah's boat is shaking. And they select straws, and they're about to throw Yonah overboard. And they ask Yonah, they say, by the way, who are you? What? Who are you? Like, where did you come from? You've been identified as the reason for this storm. Ma'amalachtacha, what's your profession? What do you spend your time doing? What's your life's mission? And how does Yonah answer that question? It's unbelievably profound. Yonah says, in two words, Ivri Anochi. I'm a professional Jew. I'm majoring in Judaism. That's my major. That's my profession. So I might be on the track to become a doctor, or a lawyer, or an English teacher, or a historian, or an accountant, or a rock musician, right? Or a painter. I may be a lot of different things in terms of what I spend a lot of my life doing. And that might be my career choice, and that might be my path that I put a lot of time and energy and effort into, and that's beautiful. But the Brisker Rav was teaching this lawyer from New York that at the core of what it means to be alive, to have a neshama, to be a Jew, is that that's my profession, that's my major. So when you're deciding on your major on a college campus, just remember this story for a second. Remember that, yes, there's not going to be a box to check off in selecting or declaring your major, Judaism, per se. You may not be able to check off that I want to be a professional Jew. But that's the task, that's the mission, that's the sense of opportunity and obligation that each of us have been given. To be able to declare every unknown, I'm a Jew, and I'm a proud Jew, and that's the essence of who I am. One of my heroes, one of my favorite rabbis who ever lived, and he didn't live that long ago, was a rabbi named Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld. Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld was a genius of the soul. He understood kids, and he understood what people need, and he understood the challenges of our world today. He wasn't one of these rabbis who's like still living, you know, in the time period of Bais Rishon, and doesn't really get that there's like Twitter and Facebook and that the world has evolved a little. This rabbi got, he totally got. And he built the yeshiva. He built the Shari Yashiv Yeshiva in Far Rockaway by literally plucking kids out of public school and saying, come, I want to teach what it means to be a Jew. So one time, there was a group of his students who, for the first time in their life, they had achieved a certain degree of success in their learning. They had made a siyum. I don't know what they had finished. I don't know if it was a lot or a little. They were making some type of celebration for the Torah they had learned. And Rabbi Freifeld got up to speak. He was invited to the siyum. And he says to the students, as they're sitting there at the siyum, he says, I want to quote from a famous speech from Winston Churchill. He says, Winston Churchill, during the Blitzkrieg, turned to the people of England and said, I want to just remind you, wherever you are, remember one thing, you are England. You are England. You don't just happen to live in England, you are England. And Rabbi Freifeld turned to his students, who he saw had embraced their Judaism in a new way, And he said, no, I want to just tell you, it's not that you have to be culturally Jewish. You are Yiddishka. You are the Jewish people. And your commitment to that is going to shape and mold the next generation. And that's a big responsibility. And it's a big privilege. But every single one of you has the ability to choose it in that way. To say about myself, I'm a Jew. And I'm never going to deny that. I'm never going to be ashamed of that. I'm going to wear that badge of honor so proudly on the world stage. And I know that I'm going to make an unbelievable difference in the world. Yesterday was Lag BaOmer. I hope everyone realizes. Yesterday was Lag BaOmer, the celebration of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, there was one person who loved you almost as much as a God himself, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. His belief in every single Jewish man, woman, and child was unbelievable. And that's why the largest Jewish gathering that takes place on planet Earth on a yearly basis are Jews coming to Meiron to be at the celebration of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. You know how many Jews go to Meiron? Any idea? You have any idea? How many people do you think went to Meiron? It's like a one-town street in northern Israel. How many people do you think went yesterday to Meiron? You have a sense? 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, 100,000. What do you think? You know there's about 300,000 Jews who go to Meiron on Lag BaOmer? And you know the very different types of Jews. You have Jews who are, you know, ostensibly very, outwardly very religious, who are very committed to Torah mitzvahs. You have Kabbalists who spend their whole life sitting and learning Torah and davening and working wonders for the Jewish people. And then you have people who come, women come, belly dancers come to be connected to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. You have Israeli soldiers without yarmulkes and tattoos who come to be married to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. You have all sorts of Jews. It's unbelievable. It's mamash like Mashiach. It's this gathering of Jews in this unbelievable way. 300,000 Jews coming to connect to the person who revealed to us the secrets of the Torah and the writings of the Zohar. And you wonder, what does the average Jew have a connection to that? The deepest secrets of the Torah. I barely have a connection to this Gemara Sanhedrin. Well, I have a connection to the Zohar. And yet, hundreds of thousands of Jews are pulled like a magnet to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Where does that come from? I know some of the Frisch students, I feel like every year the numbers grow. Anyone get to go this year to Long Island or Weinberger? Yeah, anyone? Rabbi Ashes, who took you? Would you have Rabbi Ashes? I know Rabbi Ashes takes guys every year. It's amazing. No, how many people are there? More than 1,000.
Oh yeah.
About 1,500 people. So what a bunch of people like ourselves, very regular, simple Jews. How do we get pulled in to the simple Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? You know what the answer is? Because Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai believes in every single one of us. When Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai revealed the secrets of the Torah, you know what he was really revealing besides really deep mystical stuff that most of us probably wouldn't understand even if we tried to learn it? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was revealing the secret of the neshama of the Jewish people. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was saying that even though you look in the mirror and you see yourself a certain way, right? Or even though you look at your life and sometimes you see yourself a certain way, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said there are so many deeper layers in it. There are such deep layers of who you are and who you will be and who you will become if you want. The secret of being a Jew is what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was really revealing to the world. So I want to share with you the secret of being a Jew. It's my favorite medrash. There's a medrash in Shir HaShirim. Listen to this medrash. It's beautiful. The medrash says, commenting on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Lo yadati nafshi samasti. Lo yadati nafshi. Lo yadati nafshi. I didn't know my own soul. Those are the words of the medrash. Medrash says, imagine if you will, there was a princess. And as a young girl, she was kidnapped from the palace. The king's daughter was taken hostage. And for years, the king didn't know what had happened to his daughter. And in truth, what had happened is she ended up being raised by these lowlifes. They kidnapped her, they took her in. And over time, she never even knew that she was a princess. And she developed some new friends, and she's hanging out with, you know, people who are not necessarily striving to make a difference in the world. It's a nice way to say it. And the king's driving one day. All of a sudden, he's traveling in this, you know, his royal chariot. He's traveling along this major highway. And he's looking out over the fields of his kingdom. And he sees in the distance, he sees a young woman. He sees a young girl. And he says to his driver, whoa, stop the chariot. He stops the car, stops the chariot, whatever he was driving in. And he says to his advisor, he says, go get that girl, go bring me that girl. So he says, Your Honor, the king, that girl over there hanging out with those friends down by the train track, yeah, you see that one over there, that blonde girl over there? Bring her to me. I need to speak with her. And he calls this girl over. And she's standing there, she's trembling before the king. She thinks she's in trouble, maybe for graffiti the side of a building the night before.
you know, are drinking behind that, you know, the king's whatever. And the king says, do you know who you are? The king says, you're my daughter. And he starts to tell her the story of her own life, that you were kidnapped years ago. And I know you don't even realize that you're a princess, but you're a princess. And he opens the door to his caravan. Maybe it was like a stretch Hummer or whatever. And she climbs in and he says, come, take me back to the palace. Right? I'm going to show you who you really are. And the girl is totally, totally beside herself. And her friends are standing there. Her friends are watching as she's pulling away. And she looks out the window one last time and her friends say, we can't believe it. All these years we've been hanging out with a princess? Who knew? You know, when we were shoplifting from like the local, you know, supermarket, a candy bar, right? This kingdom is yours. The whole thing is yours. We can't believe it that all these years we had no idea who you were. And as the car is pulling away, as the king with his entourage is pulling off back to the palace, heading back to the palace, she calls out to her friends out the window. She says, you think you're surprised? How do you think I feel? How do you think I feel in this moment? For the first time, I'm realizing who I am. Says the Medrash Lo Yadati Nafshi. A person can go their whole life not really knowing who he is or who she is. Says the Medrash, this is the story of the Jewish people. The Jewish people ended up in Mitzrayim, despised, lowly slaves, trampled by the world. And then all of a sudden, God himself comes to Mitzrayim, works awesome miracles, wonders for a year, 10 plagues, really cool special effects, you know, splits the sea. And all of a sudden, the Jewish people are selected or being given the Torah. And the nations of the world say, you're the chosen people? We never would have guessed. We thought you were the lowest ranking members of society. And the Jewish people turn to the nations of the world as we're standing there receiving God's Torah. And we say to the nations of the world, you think you're surprised? I didn't think you. We didn't know it either until this moment. Every single one of us is carrying a secret inside of ourselves. Every single person in this room has a secret. Has been stamped with the awesome privilege of having a Jewish neshama, of being a Jew. And again, it's a weighty responsibility. To take that out to the world is a big responsibility. But it's something that, again, is such a privilege. It's really the ultimate privilege. Allow your religiosity to evolve. 12th grade is not where it ends, my friend. It's where it begins. You walk out the doors of Frisch, and now you start to make real choices. What it means? What did I learn in all these years? All the time, and the energy, and the investment, and the love that your rebbeim, your teachers, and your parents put into this education. Now it's time to make some serious, serious choices about what does that mean to you? What do I feel in terms of my connection, responsibility to the Jewish people? To be able to defend Eretz Yisrael on the world stage, and the Jewish people are always criticized and ridiculed for having very, very reasonable beliefs. Allow yourself to evolve. Don't assume that you know the whole secret of your own life at this point. Rabbi Akiva, the teacher of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So everybody knows that Rabbi Akiva had a big yeshiva, and the students died this time of the year, and that's why it's here. So Omer, we don't know, a lot of people don't realize Rabbi Akiva's story. You know the part about don't even. He saw water dripping on a rock, and he saw, oh, if water can make a hole through a rock, then maybe it can make a Torah can change my heart. Not much, you know, we've heard these midrashim and these gemaras. There's a gemara that maybe you never heard about Rabbi Akiva. You know that Rabbi Akiva, when he was a teenager, was completely off the derech? You know the way we describe an off the derech, an at-risk teen? You know how much Rabbi Akiva hated Judaism? Rabbi Akiva. Every single person you're going to meet in this book is a student of Rabbi Akiva. The whole Gemara, the whole Torah Shel Peh is transmitted through the world of Rabbi Akiva, the students of Rabbi Akiva. Do you know how much animosity Rabbi Akiva had for religious people? The Gemara says that years later, Rabbi Akiva was sitting with his students. He turned to them one time, and he said to them, do you know how much I hated rabbis when I was younger? And they say, no, Rabbi, why don't you tell us? So he says, I'll tell you. He says, when I would see Orthodox Jews, when I saw rabbis, when I saw people at Torah, it upset me so much, I hated them so much, I wanted to bite them like a dog. That's what Rikina says. So they said, Rikina, why a donkey? Why not a dog? Right? Maybe a rabid dog that attacked. Why'd you pick the example to bite like a donkey? He said, because I had such hatred for religious people. He says that a donkey, when a dog bites, the dog tears out its flesh. When a donkey grabs onto a person, it can crush their bones. That's how much I hate rabbits. And this same Rabbi Akiva, because he had the humility to allow life to be a process, because he allowed himself, as one of my, again, great mentors, Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld Zatzal said, life is an evolution, not a revolution. You don't have to expect to have it all figured out by the time you're 18. Allow life's story to unfold. Allow the secret of your soul to unfold. So Rabbi Akiva said, I had the humility to keep trying and to be open-minded. And that same Rabbi Akiva, who hated religious people so much, became one of the most outstanding rabbis of the generation. He changed his ways. He matured. He saw things differently. He thought Torah was something, and then later in life, he realized, you know what, Torah is actually a very beautiful way to live your life. It's not all restrictions. It's not all things you can't do. It's not God's way of controlling us. It's an opportunity to live a really, really deep and productive and meaningful life. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva becomes the one in the Gemara who says in the words, the Pasuk says, "As Hashem Elokecha Tira," you should fear God. But the word et Hashem Elokecha Tira, comes to include something else.
The following students, please come to the main office. Jason Aronoff, Caleb Chapman, Dean Shine, David Weinberger, Giselle Zimmerman, Alana Abramovic, Zoe Downsauer, Bacheva Oheon, Shoshi Bernstein, Rifa Kogan, Julia Cohn, and Zahava Sivak.
So Riki will look at that poster. Fear something with God. And he says, fear something with God? Yes. We have to have respect for our teachers of Torah. The same way we respect God. Complete transformation. From being an off the derech, angry, bitter teen, being an inspired leader of Jewish people. That's the story of Rabbi Akiva. And again, that's the choice that each and every one of you have to make. To decide, do I embrace, again, that stamp of Ivri Anokhi, a proud Jew? Listen to this unbelievable line. I want to read you the second to last line in a book written by a person who's not Jewish, who wasn't deeply associated with Jewish people. I want to read to you a line from a historian, a writer, a teacher, of English literature. He's famous for some of his work on Shakespeare's sonnets. He passed away in 1997. His name is A.L. Raps. He was an Englishman, a real Englishman, an English literary giant. And in 1995, he wrote a book called Historians I Have Known. Listen to what he writes in the second to last line of his book. It's going to blow your mind. If there is any honor in all the world that I should like, it would be to be an honorary Jewish citizen. Here's a person who probably had very minimal contact with Jews, maybe in a university setting, he met some Jews. And yet, here he is looking back in a book called Historians I Have Known, reflecting on his whole life. And he said, if there's any badge of honor that I would like to wear, the English are very proper about these types of things, if there's any badge of distinction that I would like to have, it would be to be considered an honorary Jewish citizen. Mi ka'am kli Yisrael. My friends, who's like the Jewish people? We have to embrace that in the deepest of ways. I'll tell you an unbelievable story. It happened a couple of years ago. There was an organization in Eretz Yisrael, I'm sure some of us have heard of it, called Zaka. They're the organization who, they do a lot of things. Unfortunately, God forbid, if there's a terrorist attack, or if Jews are killed, they're the ones who are the first ones on the scene to make sure, to ensure that there should be the greatest dignity and respect for any drop of Jewish blood. I'm sure you've seen pictures, never. Tragic scenes. Right, of Zaka workers very painstakingly making sure that every bit of Jewish blood would be collected and given a proper burial to ensure kavod hamid, to ensure that, God forbid, if a Jew would be killed, that they should have the proper, always to respond to tragedies and to difficult situations. They're always the first ones on the line. So years ago, if you remember, there was a terrible, terrible incident in Haiti. Years ago, there was that terrible earthquake. And years later, there was a Zaka worker who found himself in America. He was collecting tzedakah from the organization to allow the wonderful work of that organization to continue. And he was heading back to Israel. He had a flight out of JFK. He's driving to the airport. He'd been in America. He was collecting, speaking about the important work of the organization for a week or so, 10 days. And now he's heading back to JFK to catch his flight. He's driving a rental car. And all of a sudden, this gas light goes on. He didn't realize that his car was almost out of gas. And he's driving along, right? He's trying to get to the next gas station. And then something that never actually happened. His car actually ran out of gas. Like, there's always, like, a little bit more. You know, you can always, like, push it a little bit more. His car actually ran out of gas. And there he is, this Israeli guy, standing alongside his car. He didn't have a cell phone. He's standing there alongside the highway. And he's trying to figure out what on earth is he going to do with himself. He's got to get to the airport. He barely speaks English. He's somewhere along, like, not a really great stretch on the way to JFK Airport. And he's standing there, he doesn't know, he's totally beside himself. He doesn't know what to do with himself. He said, all of a sudden, the car pulls up behind him. And this really, really tall, dark-skinned fellow gets out of the car and starts walking over. And he says to him, he says, you Jewish? It's this Israeli guy, and he goes to speak English. Yes? He says, any chance you're from Israel? So he says, yes. So the guy says, wait right here. I'll take care of this. Guy gets back in his car and he drives off. This guy's standing there. The Zaka worker from Eretz Israel. He's watching the clock. He's got to catch his flight. Such a strange occurrence. This guy stops. Jewish, Israel, drives off. He says, about 20 minutes later, this guy pulls back up onto the highway. He's carrying one of these canisters of gasoline. And he starts filling up his car. And this Israeli, with his broken English, is trying to thank him, trying to inquire, like, why? Why would you do this for me? And the fellow starts to explain. He says, that terrible earthquake in Haiti, those are my people. He says, I've been living in America for a number of years now. He says, but those people, when that terrible earthquake took the lives of so many of my people, I decided, here in America, I have to get there, I have to help my people. I had family members, I had friends. Those were my people, and I decided to go help my people. He said, when I got there, there were many people, many different organizations from different parts of the world who had come to help. He said, but there was no one, there was not a single organization that had the care and respect and the sensitivity and the willingness to do whatever it took to help my people, more so than those Jewish people from Israel. The Jewish people who came from Israel to Haiti to help my people, they were the most sensitive, the most caring, and the most loving people I have ever met in my life. And I asked them at the time, I said, why are you here? Why are you here? These are not your people. And yet they felt a sense of responsibility to the world. And I decided then and there that whenever I encounter a Jewish person, especially a Jewish person from the land of Israel who needs help, I'm going to do whatever it takes to help. Mika Amcha Yisrael. My friends, that's how the world is looking at us. That's how the world is looking at us. The world is looking at the Jewish people. They see that we're different. They see that we're special. And sometimes, unfortunately, the world looks at us in a negative way. But hopefully, more often than not, the world's able to look at a Jew, again, the way that English historian said, and said that there's no greater honor in the world than being an honorary Jewish citizen. You don't have to be honorary Jewish citizens. You guys are the real deal. You have the stamp of Ivri Anochi that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has placed on each and every one of your hearts. And you have to remember, when you go out to the world, that there's not a lot of us. And every single one of you counts in a very, very significant way. The Wall Street Journal, 2015, April 2nd, listen to this. A study of world's religions, what the world's religions are going to look like in 2050. Yeah? 2050. What projections, based on the growth of different religions, where the world's going to be by the year 2050. And April 2nd, 2015, the Wall Street Journal said, Muslims by 2050 will be as numerous as Christians. And the Jewish people, they had a beautiful, you know, spreadsheet, this nice chart. The Jewish people are less than zero, percentage-wise. I'm not sure how that works either. But we're less than 0% on this grid, on this scale, compared to Muslims and Christians, right? The Jewish people are hovering right around folk religions and other religions. That's where we are. That's the projection in terms of what we can see on the outside, where the Jewish people are headed. And yet, at the same time, every single one of us knows. Study a little history. Zechor Yemot Olam, like the Torah says, study a little history and see who's made the greatest impact in molding humanity. It's the Jewish people. The numbers don't really make a lot of sense. The Jewish people have played such a profound role in shaping the way the world is in all areas, from ethics to science to technology to values, everything. The Jewish people are somehow always on the front lines. Nobel Prize winners. It doesn't really make a lot of sense that such a tiny group of people should have such a profound impact on the world. But the answer is apparently when it comes to the Jewish people, we don't need a lot, we don't need many people to make a difference. Because we can be a small nation, but when everyone lives with a sense of responsibility, when every single Jew understands how much power and potential they have inside himself or herself, then we go out to the world, a tiny little nation, we make an unbelievable difference. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Lord Jonathan Sacks, former chief rabbi of England. He has a volume of letters called Letters to the Next Generation. I want to read to you one of those letters. He's writing to, again, a fictional, letters are written, so to speak, to anyone. And he's writing to Ruth, who has a question, says, you know, Rabbi, why me? Why do I need to do this? Why do I need to carry this weight, this burden, this responsibility to be a Jew? And he says to the Father, Ruth, I know the difficulties you feel, the challenges you face, the problems you find in Jewish life today. We can talk about these in the days ahead. But I would not have done my duty had I not made it as clear as I can that we need you and the world needs us. There are not many Jews in the world today. We represent less than 1/5% of the population of the world. You know what that means? For every Jew, there are 100 Muslims. And for every Jew, there are 183 Christians. There's a lot more other than there is us. And therefore, says Rabbi Sacks, we are a tiny people. We always were. Moshe said so 3,300 years ago. Not because you are numerous did God love you or choose you, because you are in fact the smallest of all the nations. And Rabbi Sacks goes on to say, I wonder why that is. Why is it that we're so small? He says you could say it's based on the persecution of the Jewish people, how many Jews have been lost in persecution throughout the generations, what a significant percentage of our people have been crushed, have been destroyed, have been killed, brutally murdered in the Holocaust. We can certainly point to that for the reason that the Jewish people remain so small. But then Rabbi Sacks gives a second explanation. And he says, no, we're not small simply because the nations of the world have taken advantage of us and have crushed us to the point that we've remained small. We're small because God wants us to realize that it doesn't take a lot of people to do unbelievable things. He says, somewhere in the story lies the secret of Jewish smallness. The secret of Mishum Benachai, the secret of Jewish smallness is that it doesn't take a lot of Jews to lead the entire world, to shape and to mold the entire world. I want to read a poem. You know who wrote this poem? Someone in this building wrote this poem. Madison Fisher wrote this poem. Madison in the room? I don't know who Madison is. All I know is I walked in today and I picked up the 29th volume of what I referred to Drago Fisher as Calliope. The 29th volume of Calliope, I don't know if that was really pronounced. And I opened to a beautiful poem by Madison Fishman. Listen to this. It's exactly where I Sacks is saying. It's from one of you. I look out. I, the small me. I is small. People are large. I, the tiny I versus the world. I, the minuscule me. I versus time. What can I do? I, the small, little, tiny, minuscule me. I can be me. I can be me. Beautiful, no? But you have to believe it. You have to believe that even though there's 100 Muslims and 183 Christians for every single one of you, what you're going to do in the world as a Jew, as a proud Jew, is going to go out to the world to shape the Jewish people, to shape humanity, to shape the world. There's no one who can fill in for you. There's no one who can take your place. The Jewish people have been molding the world since the beginning of time. It's our job, it's your job, to go out to the world to continue to do so. What's the secret of the Jewish people? What's our secret? Rishon Baruchai is revealing the secrets. And I told you, every one of us has a secret depth of our soul that maybe we haven't encountered yet, and hopefully you'll continue to evolve as the years go on. Again, as Rabbi Akiva, who was very knocked into his Judaism, became one of the greatest teachers and leaders of the Jewish people. What's the secret of the Jew? So many Svarim explain, many deeper works explain, that Lag BaOmer that we celebrated yesterday actually has a very deep connection to Yom Kippur. Which might also explain why everyone feels so connected. Why every type of Jew shows up, the same way that every type of Jew shows up for Yom Kippur, if you don't show up for anything else the rest of the year. Every Jew shows up for Yom Kippur. And one of the highlights of the service of Yom Kippur, the Yom Kippur Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, is that moment where a lottery takes place. A lottery takes place, two lots are selected, two goats that look exactly alike. One goat's going to end up off a cliff, the Sarla Azazel, and the second goat is going to end up as an offering to God in the Beis HaMikdash. And you kind of wonder, the most important day of the year, one of the most important decisions to be made, the fate of the Jewish people hanging in the balance, and now we're playing lotteries. We're randomly going to select that this goat should go off the cliff, and this goat should go to God. And the halacha is that the goats have to cost the same amount, and they have to look alike. According to some, they have to be twin goats. Twin goats. And yet then randomly, we sort of like randomly select, this one's going this way, this one's going that. How do you make sense of that? Why would I entrust such an important part of such an important day to a lottery? And the answer from the founder of Chabad, of Lubavitch, the Baal Tanya, or Shner Zalman of Liad, is that the reason that it has to, the day has to unfold in the course of, this avodah has to take place through a lottery, is that a lottery, we don't really understand a lot. We don't really understand why someone picked those numbers that that person picked on that day. Or why they went from being a poor, simple worker to being a person around $100 million in their bank. It doesn't really add up. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. And the Baal Tanya said, on Yom Kippur, we have this awesome lottery to remind the Jewish people that, you know what? It doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense why we're selected. It doesn't really make a lot of sense why each of you were selected to be part of the Jewish people. And it gives a great responsibility. But you know what? You are selected. Some secretive reason God chose you. God chose each and every one of us. And Hashem has entrusted us to go out to the world and make it. Don't, God forbid, be that Sar la'Azazel that wanders off a cliff into obscurity. Be a Sar la'Hashem. Be someone who offers himself or herself, your strength, your talent, whatever that means to you, to proudly serve the Jewish people, to proudly serve humanity. There are people in Haiti who are looking to you. There are people in the airports who are looking to you. I read a story, there was a fellow who was sitting in the airport, a Jewish guy sitting in the airport. He's sitting in this airport, and he looks up at one point, you know, from whatever he's doing, on his phone or his book, his safer, whatever he was doing, and he sees there's a guy sitting on the other side of the aisle, and he's staring at him. He's looking at him like this. Just keeps staring at him. So he goes back to whatever he's looking at, and he's trying to, the Jewish guy, he's trying to like, you know, he must not be looking at me, there must be someone sitting behind me or something. He looks up a few minutes later, and again, this guy, he's like locked on him. His eyes are completely locked on him. And he's just getting uncomfortable at this point. It's weird. It's creepy, you know? Like getting ready to call airport security, like, this guy's staring at him for the last 10 minutes. So he goes back to whatever he's doing, he looks up again, and the guy's still staring at him. So he gets up out of his seat and he walks over to this fellow. He says, I'm sorry, it seems like you're looking at me. So now the guy says, I hope I didn't make you uncomfortable. He said, but I can see. He said, actually made me very uncomfortable. He said, but I can see. He said, I can see that you're Jewish. I see you're wearing that, you know, that little hat that Jews wear. He said, where I come from, I don't see a lot of Jews. He said, and I wanted to see what a child of God looks like. I'm sorry, but I just couldn't take my eyes off a child of God. The Torah says, Banim Atem LaHashem Elokeinu. Every single one of us is a child of Hashem. The nations of the world are looking at us. The nations of the world are staring at us. And they want to see, what are the Jewish people doing? What are the Jewish people doing for humanity? What are the Jewish people doing to make the world a better place? My friends were on the front lines time and time again. So I want to give us a bracha. Happens to be my birthday today. It's my Hebrew birthday. I'm accepting gifts after this wonderful seminar. Anything you want to do, you want to make a cake. Maybe I'll go down to the cafeteria. I know Frisch has good food. But I want to give us a bracha. I want to give us a bracha, collectively. You know, you think like, you know, I signed up already, right? I'm actually like a professional Jew because I spend my time teaching Torah. But you're also Ivri Anochi. When Yonah was being thrown off that boat, and Yonah was in a very difficult situation, and they asked him, what do you do, Ma'am Malach? What's your major? What's your profession? Yonah was clear to him, more than anything else, I'm a Jew. First and foremost. Everything else is a commentary on that. And that commentary could be a nice, broad, colorful commentary. But the starting point of everything that I am is to be a Jew. So I'll just leave you with one final story. It's really a mashal that I saw from a great rabbi in Israel. He sent it out in an email to the president. He said, one time there was a bear that was wandering around in the forest looking for something to eat. And the bear was getting hungry. And he couldn't find any smaller animals to attack. He couldn't find any berries to eat. And it was getting to the point that the bear's life was in danger. So the bear decided, you know what? Instead of dying, starving as a hungry bear in the forest, I'm going to hand myself over to the zoo. At least there, you know, I'll live in captivity, but at least I'll get food. So the bear wanders over to the zoo, wanders out of the forest, he comes to the zoo. Yeah, and he walks into the office at the zoo, and he says, hi, I'm a bear, I'd like to check in, you know? I'd like to sign up to be a bear in your zoo. So he said, listen, we have bears over here in the zoo. We don't need any bears, but you know, the truth is we're looking for a monkey. We could use a monkey in our zoo. So the bear said, I'm a bear. He said, yeah, but we need a monkey. You want to be a monkey or not? The bear's thinking, back to the forest, and just thought, okay, you know, I guess I could try. I'll try to be a monkey. So they put him in the cage with the monkeys, And these other monkeys are swinging around the trees, and they're telling him, if you want to be a monkey, you got to swing in the trees, you got to hang by your tail. The bear's like doing whatever it can. The bear's eating these bananas, and the bear feels very out of place. Just so happens one day, the bear's going for a walk. I'm not sure exactly how a bear goes for a walk out of its cage, but the bear's going for a walk around the zoo, and he comes to a section of the zoo, and he sees that there's a cage, and it says bears. And he looks into the bear cage, and he sees there's a monkey sitting in the bear cage. He's looking in, and he sees the monkey. The monkey's sitting there, and he's got all this delicious food, and he's not eating anything. And he calls this monkey over. He says, what are you doing in here? He says, I'm a bear. He says, you're not a bear, you're a monkey. He says, I know, but when I came to the zoo, they told me that they didn't need any monkey, they needed a bear. So he says, the bear says, this is great. I'm really a bear, and I'm pretending to be a monkey. You're really a monkey pretending to be a bear. Let's switch. This is perfect. I'm not so good at being a monkey, you're clearly not so good at being a bear. We can go, let's talk to the zoo administration. Let's talk to them, maybe we can switch. So the monkey and the bear, they go, they're so happy, they go hand in hand, they go to the administrator of the zoo, and they tell them their great plan. It's perfectly logical, let's switch back. I'll be a bear, you'll be a monkey. And the administrator says, absolutely not, we'll have no such thing. We'll have no such thing, we're not switching cages here, you're not going to be a bear, you're not going to be a monkey. Everyone has been assigned, that's what each person has to do. So they say to him, do you realize that's crazy, it doesn't make any sense. So the administrator says, truthfully, I'm a donkey. When I showed up in the zoo, they needed a zoo administrator, so I took over as zoo administrator. You think we're going to allow everyone to just keep switching the positions? When a bear tries to be a monkey, and a monkey tries to be a bear, and a donkey tries to be a zoo administrator, comes a crazy world. The Cops of Rebbe said, if I am I, and you are you, and I'm truly I, and you are truly, if I'm only going to be I because of you, and if I'm going to decide what I'm going to live like because of someone else's picture of what I should look like, then I'm not really I, and you're not really you. So I want to give us a bracha. I want to give us a bracha so we know who we are. Remember that mashal, remember that medrash of that princess who was captured far away from the palace, but forgotten everything it meant to be a princess. Remember who we are. Remember the accomplishments of the Jewish people. We're the greatest team on planet Earth. The most unbelievable collection, a tiny collection, but an unbelievable collection of the most lofty souls, the most spirited people, with such energy and such passion to make the world a better place. Become a leader on that team. Become someone who majors in Judaism, every anothi, to give that declaration loud and proud anywhere you find yourself in the world. And that Amir Tzashem, the world will continue to see Jews the way that fellow was staring at that Jew in the airport, a child of God. The world will see us in the right way. And Amir Tzashem will continue to make such a difference in the world. That we'll be able to see with our own eyes the redemption of the world, Mashiach's arrival, speedily in our days. Thank you.